On a Monday, we're in conversation with the new chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Don Millis is on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Millis was picked as chair just days after being appointed to the commission by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to fill a Republican vacancy and joins the five other commissioners on this body that administers and enforces our state's election laws. Join in on election administration, voter registration, election integrity, ballots heading into the August primary and midterms. 800-642-1234. Don Millis is a tax attorney, commission chair. Don Millis, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Let's start with the why. Why did you accept an appointment to the election commission, from Speaker Robin Voss?
Well, it wasn't something I was looking forward to, that's for sure. The Elections Commission has become the center of a lot of controversy of late. And, I served on the State Elections Board, which is the way the agency was cast back in the before the 2000s, back in 1990. And I think at the time, election administration was thought of as a referee. The idea is not to be seen or heard, just to make the calls. And I think it was that way. The frustrating part is that today we have more safeguards in place to guarantee valid election results. We have a statewide voter registration list. We have voter ID. And yet in Wisconsin, the 2016 presidential result was challenged, and then 2020. Election results have been challenged, and there's less faith in the confidence that election results reflect the true vote than at any time in our history. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that. And one of the things that I would like to do is to return to a time in which people could rely on or have faith in the election process.
That is a tall order. Bearing all of that in mind, what are your top priorities for improving the administration of elections in Wisconsin?
Well, I think part of it is to improve the confidence in this. I mean, one of the things that came out, or one of the allegations that came out in the 2016 election, the Jill Stein lawsuit, I was a defendant in that lawsuit, was the concern that election tabulating machines were having a high error rate, or that they were being manipulated. You also heard in the 2020 election results, there was concerns about Dominion software and different companies like that. And so one of the things that we've talked to staff already about is increasing the number of machines that have audits. After every partisan general election, there is an audit of a certain number of machines. I think in 2018, I think the audit was about 5% of the machines. Mm-hmm. I think that went down in 2020. And so we have federal funding available. And so one of the things that I want to raise to the commissioners is to use the HAVA fund, that's the Help America Vote Act funding, to increase the number of machines that are audited. This is a random process. The idea is to audit every type of machine, at least one machine in every county. I'd like to increase that somewhat. We have between, I don't know the exact number, between 3,000 and 4,000 tabulating machines in Wisconsin. I think a goal would be to audit 10% of those. And that is that's a process in which you rerun the ballots and then you hand count the ballots to see what the error rate. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is to make sure that the machines are running properly. The other is educational, because despite the best efforts of our clerks, people will not make marks the way they should be. And this is just a simple logistical issue. And so we want to make sure that when we find ballots that are not counted because someone has used a different color pen, or they've used a pen in the margin or something like that, that we can educate people and say, look, this is what happens. And that's not an indication that the machines aren't functioning, but it's more voter education tool. So the audits have a couple different purposes.
And speaking of hand-counted paper ballots, there was this resolution at the Republican State Convention last month requiring all Wisconsin elections to be conducted by hand-counted paper ballots. Would you support that move?
Well, you know, I saw that, and I haven't actually had a chance to talk to staff about that. Mm-hmm. I do know that the one of the issues with that is that it's going to be very expensive because we rely on not necessarily employees, but we pay poll workers for their time to do that. The other logistical issue, and I'm not saying can't be overcome, is the time it takes to do that, especially with a primary election, because we've had to move our primary election earlier. It used to be in September. Now it's in August, but it's still pretty late for a primary election. And to do a hand count of all those will take some time. To tell you the truth, I saw that was when that resolution passed, being on the Elections Commission was the farthest thing from my mind. It hadn't occurred to me that I would be doing this. So until you mentioned it, I hadn't actually thought of that. So that's probably something that we could certainly talk to staff about, but that's an issue of state law. That's mm-hmm. really largely beyond my pay grade. That's going to be something for the legislature and the governor to decide.
Don Millis with us, new chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. You can join in with your questions about election administration here in our state, 800-642-1234. Let's take a call now. Andrew joining us from Waukesha. Andrew, hi. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to make a few comments. First of all, to hear Don say that something is above his pay grade in regards to elections means he should not be the chairman. Bob Spindell should be the chairman. The fact that Robin Voss picked him is because Robin Voss doesn't want to see real reform in the elections in our state. What happened in the nursing homes was election fraud to the fullest extent. I can't even tell you how sick I was to watch the videos of Eric Cardell interviewing those nursing home residents who had problems with dementia, couldn't even remember who was running, what day it was. Why didn't the Wisconsin Election Commission interview the administrators and the rec department heads who actually collected the votes in those nursing homes to figure out what exactly was going on? But they didn't do that because they facilitate election fraud. They need to be dissolved, and Megan Wolf needs to be fired.
Andrew, thank you. Don, go ahead.
Sure. You know, since I've come on the Elections Commission, I've suddenly become the defendant in 8 different lawsuits, and I've had a number of questions posed to me about the 2020 election and what went right and what went wrong, and my feeling is that everything that has gone on in 2020 that was or there's thoughts that it was not correct should be investigated. I know that in the 2022 election, there's an effort by, certainly I know Republicans because I'm a Republican and I'm aware of what's going on. There's a concerted effort to increase training for poll workers and the like so that we can have greater confidence in the result. I have not had a chance to talk to Bob. Bob Spindell about some of these things. I'm certainly interested in pursuing anything, any complaint where there's an allegation of fraud or a violation of the law. That's what we're here for. I'm not, in terms of above my pay grade, I don't make the law. I can recommend changes. I can talk to legislators. But again, I'm not looking to run for the legislature to decide what the election law should be. We can certainly give our input on it, though.
Another thing, though, to address here, Don, is this Republicans calling for dissolving the agency, putting the legislature in charge of election administration. How should your commission be structured, or should it exist at all?
Well, I think that's going to be something that's going to be resolved by the legislature. I haven't given a tremendous amount of thought as to whether or not the Elections Commission should be replaced or if it should be replaced, how it should be replaced. I can tell you this. I've had experience with the old Wisconsin Elections Board. I had experience with the Government Accountability Board, and this is my second go around on the Elections Commission. I do think that there are some things that we've learned over the years, for example, with the Government Accountability Board. I thought that that was a mistake. I thought it was a mistake to have to put folks who are ostensibly nonpartisan in charge of that, because that led to a myriad of problems. The other issue with the Government Accountability Board was that it operated in secret. I used to represent politicians and lobbyists and contributors in front of the Government Accountability Board. We were able to resolve all sorts of complaints favorably for my clients, and the public never knew about that. And that was, I think that was good for my clients, it was good for my practice, but it was not good for the public. And so I think the Elections Commission is a better model than the others. If the legislature wants to improve on that, I'm happy to talk to them about it, but it's not something that I'm prepared to opine on.
Wisconsin Elections Commission newly appointed commissioner for a Republican seat, newly elected chair Don Millis with us on the work of administering our state's election laws. In light of heightened scrutiny from the GOP following the 2020 election, join in with your questions about how elections are carried out in our state, what election integrity means for the midterms. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report as we talk with the new chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Don Millis fills the spot left vacant by former Commissioner Dean Knutson, who abruptly resigned in May. Knutson said at his final commission meeting he could no longer represent Republicans who had labeled him a Republican in name only because of his willingness to speak the truth.
In this case, the painful truth is that President Trump lost the election in 2020, lost the election in Wisconsin in 2020. And the loss was not due to election fraud.
Join in on the role of the commission carrying out election law. 800-642-1234. Commission Chair Don Millis with us for about 9 more minutes. Don, you hear Dean Knutson there, you filling the vacant seat. Do you agree with his view that President Trump lost the 2020 election?
I'm not going to comment on the 2020 election for a couple of reasons. One is, I think I mentioned before the break, that as soon as I became a member of the commission, I became the defendant in 8 different lawsuits, some of which are relating to the 2020 election. Second, Justice Gableman, who is still, as I understand it, investigating the 2020 result, only submitted an interim report to the commission, which the commission responded to a few months ago. There is certainly the possibility that he's going to submit a final report, and I'd rather wait to see what he provides before we make any comment. The 2020 election involves all sorts of things. There are issues of drop boxes and the like. Drop boxes is another subject of a lawsuit that the state Supreme Court will hopefully resolve here in the next few weeks. We're expecting a decision. And so I just decided that I'm not going to comment on the 2020 election. Again, I was blissfully off the commission since early 2017, engaging in my practice and working on with some nonprofits. All I know about the 2020 election really is what I've read in the news, newspapers and online. And so I think I'm going to hold off until these lawsuits are resolved and we see Justice Gableman's final report.
Let's take another call now. Tom joining us from Madison. Tom, hi.
Good morning. I hope you reconsider your leadership role and your priorities. Your first and only function should be to remove Bob Spindell, a person who, having served as a false elector, purportedly representing this state, is manifestly completely unqualified and unsuitable to have any role whatsoever with the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And, you know, the fact that he was not disciplined by this commission should be a criminal complaint should be filed on this. That guy needs to go. And you probably need to go as
Tom, I'm going to stop you there. Don Millis, I know you don't want to comment on the 2020 election, but, you know, you are now joining this Republican colleague, Bob Spindell. Can you share with why Spindell was not, was not at all reprimanded by the commissioners and the commission itself for posing as a false elector?
Well, first of all, the commission is not like the state assembly or the state senate, which has the power to sanction its members. We're an administrative body. Members are selected in accordance with the law. A member can be removed if they're not qualified, but that's not the commission's role. And I've been a member of a couple different commissions, the Tax Appeals Commission and various things like that. That's not the role of an administrative agency. I think in my experience, I've served in the past and currently with the two Democratic appointees, Ann Jacobs and Mark Thompson. In my experience, since I've been back on the board, both Ann and Mark have treated Bob with respect that's due to a fellow commissioner. And again, I hate to repeat this, but that, again, his appointment, his membership on the commission is, again, beyond my pay grade. It's not something that I have any power over, and it's not appropriate for me to deal with it. If any member of the commission violates the law or does something improper, there are channels in which they can be disciplined. If I do something incorrect in my private life, I can be prosecuted under the criminal law, the civil law, but that's not the role of the commission.
Talking with Don Millis, a tax attorney, new member and chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, let's look more at election administration here and absentee ballots. Regarding absentee ballots, how do you feel about the measure prohibiting anyone other than the voter, an immediate family member or a legal guardian from returning an absentee ballot?
Yeah, I recall this discussion back in 2016. I guess I've seen a little bit about that. I don't have a problem with trying to tighten up the requirements for returning absentee ballots. I haven't spent much time, and again, I'll tell you, the vast majority of the time I've had four multiple hour meetings with staff since I've been appointed. This is like my eighth day or ninth day on the commission. It's not been that long when you think about it. And so we haven't really talked about that. That's a legislative initiative. Most of our dealings has been with just the administration and training of clerks, which is what that's what we can deal with the most. We can make recommendations for the changes in the law. You know, my feeling is that we want to create uniformity throughout the state so that everyone has the same access to early voting and to absentee voting. And we want to do it in a way which is fair. We don't want to unreasonably curtail people's access to the polls, because that to me, that's not a partisan issue, but we do want to maintain election integrity. And so I'd want to know a little bit more about those proposals and what the effect would be in terms of the number of people who might not have family members who could attest to that. So again, that's something that I haven't spent a lot of time with.
Yeah, last item here, less than a minute. The commission voted 4-2 in March to start the process for creating a rule that allows clerks to add address information without contacting the voter. Is it okay for municipal clerks to fill in missing information on the back of absentee ballot envelopes?
You know, we've had that discussion again back in 2017, and I'm a little skeptical of that. Again, I want to have a little bit more information about that. I apologize. Again, brand new to the commission. It's been about 5 years since I've been on that. And I'm a little concerned about that. And again, I'm not suggesting that clerks are going to do anything incorrect. What I'm concerned about is the public's perception of the fairness of elections. And when we have situations like that, where we allow people to fill in addresses, it gives the perception that there's a problem. And so, I have not even talked to the fellow commissioners about that proposal. So, in fact, I'm scheduled to meet this week with the attorneys for the commission to go through a number of these matters. Again, I need to be convinced that that's a good idea. I think the better thing to do is to have better education so that people who are voting absentee can complete the envelope properly in the first place.
Don, thank you for joining us.
Well, you're welcome.
Don Millis, chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing conditions inside Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake schools, the state's juvenile correctional facility, and the recent release of the 13th Court Monitor Report. As of Friday's census, the State Corrections Department reports Lincoln Hills houses 59 juvenile inmates, Copper Lake 13, and the monitor's 33-page report notes the population trending upward and significantly increasing over recent months. Join in on conditions at the youth prison and juvenile justice, 800-642-1234. Tim Muth is a staff attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. Tim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. I'm glad to be here. And thanks again to Wisconsin Public Radio for following this story over the past several years, because it's really important.
What did you learn from this new 13th report?
What we learned is that Lincoln Hills and the Copper Lake School for Girls in Northern Wisconsin, which is our one juvenile incarceration facility in the state, are having significant challenges in the number of staff that they have are able to keep and retain there at Lincoln Hills. And their response to that has been to confine youth to their cells for greater and greater periods of time during the day, so that now youth are confined to their cells for as long as 21 hours per day. And that's a significant fallback from improvements that we had seen following the resolution of the suit that the ACLU and the Juvenile Law Center brought against Lincoln Hills in 2017.
Give us a better sense of the staffing problem. How short-staffed is Lincoln Hills?
Yeah, the monitor's report found that there is a 40% vacancy rate in what they call youth counselors. We might call them guards. There's almost a 50% shortage of teachers, because Lincoln Hills has a school. Youth who are incarcerated there are entitled to have the right to be educated, but there's a 50% shortage in teachers, 50% open positions, and a 67%, two-thirds, shortage of social workers, the staff who work with the youth on behavioral issues, on their anger management, those kinds of issues. So the shortages of staffing are really very severe up at the facility in Merrill.
I made the assumption that because during the pandemic that we saw the census, the population at Lincoln Hills trending downward, a judge is not sending young people there in their sentences, that I imagined that there would be more staff per inmate. But that is not what the monitor's report reflects.
No, and I think what we're seeing is part of a problem that exists across the Department of Corrections facilities. So there are very high levels of staffing shortages, not just at Lincoln Hills, but also at the adult facilities across the state. And I think the staffing shortages partly reflect as well challenges that employers have in all sorts of fields in our state and across the country these days. We hear about employers having trouble finding people. So as there has been a turnover at Lincoln Hills, they have been unable to replace staff. Guards with new hires. I do believe that the Department of Corrections is trying hard to do that. They don't want to be short staffed. They have the approval to hire people, but they haven't been able to, and that's having serious consequences on the youth that are there. And the bigger problem, Kate, is that we shouldn't be in this position at all. Lincoln Hills was supposed to be closed by 2022. There wasn't supposed to be a youth prison in northern Wisconsin once we got to 2022. When we should have had smaller regional facilities. That's what a bipartisan group of our legislature and our Republican governor all agreed to back in 2018. And yet here we are with Lincoln Hills still open.
And I just want to make note that the Corrections Department told us in a statement over the weekend that they've recently increased wages significantly for security staff and that they're taking other steps to attract new staff and keep experienced workers because, as you mentioned, the job market is so competitive. But I would imagine, Tim, that will take time.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just hiring somebody. I mean, these are positions that require training. You just can't have somebody walk in off the street and expect them to be able to be a youth counselor, a guard in a facility like this. But I want to make sure that the point is clear that just filling all of the vacancies is not, in our view, you know, the position or what the Department of Corrections and bigger picture, the entire youth justice system needs to do. What we need to do is not be sending youth up there. We need to develop the diversion programs, the community-based programs, the local community facilities, because even if you filled all of those positions, Lincoln Hills would still be a prison, and youth should not be in prisons.
Talking about conditions at Lincoln Hills Estates Juvenile Youth Prison with Tim Muth. He is a staff attorney with the ACLU of Wisconsin and responding to the latest court-ordered monitoring report. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Roman is with us from Genoa City. Roman, hi. What would you like to bring up?
I did a little time back in the day in Illinois when I was a juvenile. And how they did it, they send you to a diagnostic center in Joliet, and then they ship you out. If you're a minor, they say you go to Charlestown. And if you're 16 or older, they send you to camps. All these state parks, they need people to work them. And they put 30, 40 so-called delinquents, and they work the parks. And they had one, prison for the juvenile killers, but that was Sheridan, Illinois. But Illinois is a much bigger state, and they have these small little camps, and they work the juveniles. You're not locked up. I mean, they should be outside working.
Roman, thank you. Tim, what do you make of Roman's assessment of putting youth to work at sites around the state?
So I'm not familiar with, you know, the specific programs Roman was talking about in Illinois, but I think the point is important that there can be a variety of different kinds of programs and settings depending on the specific needs of the youth. And Ronan talked about at the beginning that there was a diagnostic setting, a assessment of what are the needs of a particular youth, what needs to be addressed to get this youth back on the right course. And that's a really important part of the entire process. Wisconsin lacks sufficient options. I mean, what you hear from judges in the juvenile justice system is, you know, they send youth to Lincoln Hills often because they don't have other options available to them as places to place youth. Place boys and girls who are at a particular stage in the system. So we need more options, and we need that kind of assessment of what is the best level of the best setting for a given boy or girl caught up in the system.
You mentioned the monitor's report detailing the use of operational room confinement at the facilities. How is this type of confinement different from solitary that the ACLU took issue with in its lawsuit over Lincoln Hills?
Well, there's no difference. I mean, operational confinement just means you're not being confined because you did something wrong. The solitary confinement they were using when we brought the suit was used as a form of punishment. But in either case, it is a youth, you know, and there are youth as young as 13 and 14 at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. Being locked into a small room by themselves for 20 or 21 hours per day.
What does that do to a young person?
The studies are clear that there are negative, serious negative psychological and emotional effects on youth when you have that. The other thing that's happening is you're being cut off from the different kinds of programming at Lincoln Hills. The monitor's report talks about the school and the gymnasium in the school and a unit converted for games and activities and a music studio, and all those things are at Lincoln Hills, but the youth are not getting the advantage of them because they're being locked in their cells for 21 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So you can have all sorts of great infrastructure, but if because of the lack of security staff, you're not letting youth out of their rooms, they're not getting the access to the programs, the access to the facilities that they need to improve their situation.
ACLU of Wisconsin staff attorney Tim Muth providing analysis and reaction to the 13th Court Monitor report of Lincoln Hills came out earlier this month. Join in on your reaction to the report, questions about conditions inside the youth prison, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment for more Stay Cap with Tim Muth here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with ACLU of Wisconsin staff attorney Tim Muth. More than 60 youth prisoners and staff of Lincoln Hills were interviewed by the court-ordered monitoring team. Their site visit was limited to one day in May. Monitor's report came out earlier this month, and the monitoring is the result of a 2017 class action lawsuit brought by the ACLU of Wisconsin. Join in 800-642-1234. Tim Muth with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to a caller in Milwaukee, works for the Department of Corrections and doesn't wish to give their name. Please go ahead, Milwaukee.
Good morning. So I have a team of people who have been watching this information all along, and we want to create better facilities for the youth and alternative programming, which will address these needs in a much better way. We have been working on gathering the people that we feel would be most useful and helpful in this process, from security officers to counselors and everything in between. And just getting people that are like-minded without some of the issues that we have with unqualified officers, I guess you could say. But we don't know where to go from here. We've been kind of working on this slowly, trying to put together some information and get, you know, the people together and make sure we have the right people in mind. But we haven't taken the steps to find out what is it that we have to do with the state. Who do we contact? Where are the funds for this type of thing? And I'm hoping maybe this person can give us some direction to start in that way.
Thank you for that call. Tim, what would you say about people working internally trying to build consensus on alternative programs?
So there are efforts at a variety of different levels. There's an organization in Milwaukee, Youth Justice Milwaukee, which does a lot of great advocacy in this area. I believe the governor has a task force that was working on this issue. It is not that people do not want to make improvements. For example, I'm absolutely convinced that, you know, the superintendent at Lincoln Hills doesn't want to use operational confinement and have youth confined for 21 hours a day. But we're sort of in this situation right now of the labor shortage following the pandemic, the increasing population at Lincoln Hills, given the lack of other options. So there are a variety of task forces and groups working on this. The Milwaukee County court system has task forces and working groups as well. But one of the things your listeners may not be aware of is the way we, the finances work for this system that we have. So if a county, take Milwaukee County, sends a youth to Lincoln Hills, the county is responsible for paying a daily charge relating to that youth. And that daily charge is $1,150 a day, or $400,000 a year, just for one youth. So if Milwaukee County were to send 3 fewer youth up to Lincoln Hills, that would be $1 million more available in Milwaukee County for youth programming. And it's such a crazy system. I mean, to send $1,000 a day up to Lincoln Hills, where they don't have the staff, they don't have the programming currently. Whereas you think about, you know, $400,000 per youth, you could buy a lot of programming, get a lot of qualified people to work with a single youth just for $400,000. So it's such a crazy financing system that we have in place, and all the economic incentives ought to be keep the kids closer to home, load them up with services that will help them get on the right track, help them deal with the issues they're facing in their lives that have gotten them on the wrong side of the law. The money is there. It needs to be deployed better.
Why is the cost that high? You know, just being taken aback by roughly $1,100 a day. Where are these dollars going?
Sure. I mean, the reason those costs have skyrocketed do have to do with the declining population at Lincoln Hills compared to, say, what it was in 2015, 2016, before we started the lawsuit. You have all the fixed costs of running a prison, you know, the security, the cost of the facility, et cetera. And it's being divided up on a per capita basis, a per incarcerated youth basis, with a smaller and smaller group. And so the costs of running a prison have not declined nearly as rapidly, or hardly rapidly at all, compared to what was, I mean, it's been at least a 50% decline in the population of the prison since we started our lawsuit in 2017.
So we saw the approval last session at the 11th hour of a $42 million facility in Milwaukee County. How do you feel about the prospects of this new facility? And can a new facility fix what has gone wrong with youth incarceration in the past?
Well, there needs to be more than one facility put in Milwaukee County. I mean, we're talking about a statewide issue. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly, you know, there is always a problem when you're talking about correctional facilities of the not in my backyard resistance. There are local groups who, you know, whenever a particular site is proposed, the closest people object to it.
Tim, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you again for the attention that your show and Wisconsin Public Radio has paid to this issue over these years, and please keep paying attention.
Tim Muth, staff attorney with the ACLU of Wisconsin. The Corrections Department declined to come on but did provide a statement that said in part that the 13th Monitor report shows progress in key areas and that the department and facility leadership will continue to make every effort to ensure as many youth as possible are safely out of their rooms from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. We have a link to the latest Monitor's report. It's at WPR.org/mornings. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.